Good morning. Thanks for that introduction. Yes, I was here a number of years ago, and I don't remember too many faces here. I've seen some. Anybody remember me here from last time I was here? Well, there are some. Probably more than I remember. But I've been all around the world, and I've been in a lot of different places, so I have to memorize faces. If you would have me in your home, and I have about a half a day to memorize your face and your family, I would probably remember you, but otherwise not. Thanks for reading that scripture. That's a really good scripture, and I actually was going to share something from John as well. I'm come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly, and the book of John, of course, is full of things about God, and it's really true. We need to abide in him, and otherwise, I don't know how we do our ministry. So today I'm going to share a bit about my last term. Before I share, I just want to say that I'm very thankful for you to be part of the MMC, and the MMC is also supporting me in my ministry, and there are some individuals in some of the churches that support me, so I really feel part of the MMC family. I wrote a letter to my family one time and said, how many families do you belong to? And if you'd ask the kids, they'd probably say, well, only one. And I thought one day I said, how many clubs do you belong to? Or how many schools do you belong to? And you could go to a music school, and you could go to a secular school, you could go to a Christian school, and maybe you could go and be in three different schools, and you'd actually be part of three schools. So I feel like I'm part of the MMC family. I'm also part of the OMF family, and then I have my own family that I belong to. So we have families, and I'm part of the MMC family, and I'm thankful for that. I see a bunch of young people here today, and you know, I'm sorry I didn't bring any really, really young people pictures, but you will see young people today from the Philippines. But I had an email from a coworker in the Philippines, not in the part where I live, and he must have sent me about 30 pictures of different ways you can get around in the Philippines from all these little tricycles. Anybody here ever been to the Philippines? Hey, here we are, and there is somebody else. Okay, so you know there's all kinds of ways to get around, and I really would have loved to show this to the young people and say, hey, come on, why don't you come over to the Philippines and you can try these out, but we'd let you do some work too. We have tribal areas. When we get visitors, we don't just let them stay in the city in my house. We usually take them out to a tribal area and show them what it's like to live in the tribes. And even myself, for my 30 plus years, I have lived in Davao City, and I have been on tribal visits. I did a visit one time to one of our workers for about 10 days. I said, well, I have a holiday, and I want to actually just stay in the tribes. There's no telephone. There's no transportation there. You're going to walk around. You're going to see the rivers, and you're going to see... I happened to have a birthday that time, and the missionary I was visiting, she says, oh, Renetta, we're going down the river for your birthday party. And I thought, wow, I wonder what that's going to be like. Well, we had to cross the river about 10 times, but the river was only like about 4 or 5, you know, the water came up to my ankles, and I was glad for that. No deep parts in the river, except in the one river there was a deep part, and I don't know how to swim. And so when she opened up the food, she had a little pot, and there was some food in there. She said, well, I have some kamote tops here. I fried them for you. And at the end, we had cake, and the cake was a chocolate bar that a Canadian missionary, also from the MMC church, had actually left behind in a village, asked someone to drop at her house. And I remember the night before, the carabao came by, and a guy just kind of whipped out a package. And I said to Linda, I said, and what did he bring? Oh, she said, just, you know, he just had something, some message or something. But really, my chocolate bar was in there, and that was my birthday cake. So you could have lots of fun just going to the Philippines, and you don't have to stay as long as I do. I've been 30-plus years in the Philippines since I first left, and that's a long time. They told me that missionaries going long-term, they probably go for 6 weeks. So even if you aren't come for 6 weeks, we'll allow that. But do let us know if you'd like to come. I also wanted to mention that I have a book table in the back. Those are missionary stories about different parts of Asia where OMF works. you're welcome to buy the books. And if you see the little bookmarks, they're free. You can take them, and also my prayer card. So if you'd like to pray for me, do pick up a card. You can put it on your fridge, and you'll find my email address on there and other addresses that are necessary. So I do have email, and I use my computer every day. So I live on the computer a little more than others do, and I think it's a great tool, but it can be detrimental sometimes too. 33 years ago, I joined OMF, and I have just finished my last full term. I still hope to go back, but not for 4 years. I'll be going back for about a year. So you can pray that God would allow me to still go back. Having spent more than half of my lifetime in the Philippines, I think that sometimes a little more Filipino than Canadian. I noticed that particularly when I ask Canadians the forbidden things, like, how old are you? And they just look, and it seems to me when I was in Minneapolis coming back to Canada, and I was really probing this lady how old she was because I wanted to know a little bit about retirement or something, and she just not willing to give me her age. And I thought, well, that's really strange. You know, where I come from, it doesn't matter. You just, sometimes say, how old are you? Oh, I'm 55 and I'm 25, and they will just give you their, that's part of the culture. Well, you can't do this in Canada. So when I come back, I have to learn how to live in Canada again. Or how much money do you make? Or how much rent do you pay? I remember coming to the Philippines and people just say, how much rent do you pay for that house? And I thought, that's none of your business. But you never say that to Filipino. You just say, oh, well, maybe 3,000 pesos, or even if it could be 3,500, you just give an approximate amount, that's usually good. And they won't usually say, they will say on the street, you're passing them, they don't say hi or hello. They say, where are you going? No. Do you want to tell everybody where you're going? No. Well, you can actually, with your mouth, you can point over there. and they're satisfied with that. So it's kind of like a greeting. It's not the same. So you have to learn how to live in different cultures. But today I'm going to tell you a bit about my last term, and we're going to see some pictures. And if we do have time, then we'll maybe have some questions, whatever. So I'm going to go down there to read the story of what happens in front of us. Not really a story, it's a little bit of a report and an overview of my last term. And then we'll see what happens after that. Okay, we'll start with our pictures now. I was quite tired coming home this time. My last term was so full of activity and not always direct ministry. In 2007, when I returned to Davao City, I babysat the Anand's house, which is this house, for 6 months. This actually happens to be what the house that I first lived in the Philippines as a mission home, and now it has turned into a home for our tribal young people. That was quite an introduction into my youth ministry, and was also the time we had a girl who was demonized in the house. It was at the end of my term, or my time in that house, that I got word from of my mom's failing health. On the eve of my flight to Canada, I celebrated my birthday with 45 guests. One more. Okay. October 28th, I arrived in Canada, and in January, I again returned to Davao to continue ministry amongst the tribal youth. Here they're having a meeting. 2 weeks after my return to Davao, my mom passed away. Jenna, who had been with me as a working student for 10 years, got married a few months later. That's the birthday party guests. Go on here. The youth, you can see, lots of lively. We live close to the sea, so we can have lots of fun at the sea. And here's Jenna, who had been with me for 10 years. She got married a few months after I had come back in 2008. And it wasn't only that I lost my mom that year, but I also lost this girl because she was getting married and moving on away from the city. But God gives us joys along the journey. He did a wonderful thing that year. Together with Jenna and her new husband, we went to Israel for the World Christian Gathering of Indigenous People. Jenna and Eddie are two key people from the tribes of Mindanao. Jenna and Eddie are on the left, and the couple on the right are not really tribal. They're wearing a tribal outfit, but they were representing another tribe from the Philippines, and I found out that this tribal gathering was going on in Israel, so I really wanted to go to this gathering, and I had a little bonus because it was Israel's 60th anniversary, so it was just a really very profitable time to go to Israel. Then in 2009 came the shocking news that my sister Luella had cancer. Once again, the Lord provided for me to take my holiday in Canada in June of that year. I was home for Luella's second surgery and for a special event, the wedding of my niece in BC. It seemed to some people that all I was doing was having holidays. But God works at times when we're not in our ministry areas. I realized that I just could not keep up with all the Saturday youth fellowships that I was still handling in the Philippines, and through time, I was able to hand over responsibility to a young Manobo couple. This is Junjun and Gangang, and they were living in that big house, the Anand's house. After discussion on the team, we decided that the Anand's residence should be turned into a Manobo tribal dormitory. The Anands rented another house, and Junjun and Gangang Moncalas looked after a house full of college students. It was not easy to give up this youth ministry, but I really could not handle all the demands of such a ministry. On the other hand, it was an answer to prayer for nationals to take over ministry responsibilities. I had also taken on more responsibility with the scholarship program and would lead the Indigenous People's College Education Assistance Program Committee for 1 year or so. There we are having a meeting. You can't see anything on the wall yet. Dolphy Annan, who did a lot of administrative work, was so glad when I told him that I would do the financial accounting for the team. It freed him to do more oversight of team and pastoral work among the tribal leaders. By the end of 2009, I was thinking, well, now I would finally have a good 2 years yet to continue on helping with the college students and team, only to find out that I had another trip ahead, this time to Singapore, where I had a thyroid operation. One more. Oops, got a wrong picture in there. Yes, this is part of my ministry, doing the finances. And here's a big hospital. This is the hospital where I had my thyroid operation in 2010. Due to much cancer in my family, the thought was not far away. Next picture. It was welcome news when the surgeon said, "We have to take the thyroid out, but no cancer." We had to take the thyroid out, but no cancer. After this, I was able to fully involve myself in the scholarship program for students. There are many aspects of the program. So let me see if I can share with you a little bit about what we go through. First, they fill out an application form. They have to get it signed by a zone president from their particular area, and these zone presidents are leaders of our church areas. This is passed on to a committee to read and to consider, and if they are accepted, they come before the scholarship committee, as was here. There are only two of us visible here on the committee, but we had at least five or six interviewing these students one at a time. If we accept them, then they are asked to come to Davao City to take an entrance exam at the local university, which gives us an indication whether they can academically handle this or if they're really ready. Again, if they pass, they will be required to work for us for a year so that we can observe their performance. Now, students who are sitting in the audience, just think of the long, long process. Then they have to, once they're accepted, they still have to work for us in the city. There are times when students will do things that are warning signs to us that their what their character is like. Example, we had one boy who worked for one of our couples for about 3 months, and when he was given a chance to visit his home in the tribal area, he decided not to come back. So that helps us decide who to accept. Each stage of the process is monitored by the committee, and this is very time-consuming. Learning to make decisions and living in a city culture in the same country is quite a challenge. Sometimes, like our First Nations people in our city, perhaps, like Winnipeg. During their years of study, the students work as well to compensate for their schooling. Sponsors from our home country send money in for this project. Do I have another picture over there? Could you please advance this? Yes. Here we are training our students. Here I am training Idris, who lived in my house, just how to sort out papers, how to file them away. And I think I have another working picture here somewhere. This is one of our students. He's actually a graduate student here, fourth year nursing student. But he would do a really good job. He was really good at just sorting out what the yard looked like. He could do a much better job. He'd just look at something, and he was so neat and tidy. So we were actually very helpful, thankful for their help at times. Okay, next. I also visited the students, okay? It's always a joy to see God's provisions for the students, and especially when they reach their finish line. All the time and effort is worth it when we see results. Okay, this is one of our boys. He was taking mechanical or some kind of a course in a technical part of the university, and I just went to see him in his classroom. And I don't know what college students are like in Canada, but these guys, they like it if I would appear in their classrooms and just have a look and see. So if any of you students can come tell me later on if it's really like this in Canada, would you like me to visit your classroom or no? Okay, let's see. Any more pictures there? Yes, we also take the students out sometimes for lunch. I took these six girls out for a meal after church one day, and I had one guy in the youth group. He would always come running up to me after church and he'd say, "Nang, nang," which means older lady, where are we going for lunch? I'd say, "Oh, maybe today we'll just go to my house and you guys can cook." But sometimes we would go out to restaurants, and these girls were very happy. These were my English students that I had for a while. And then after we had eaten, I gave them 50 pesos each, which is just a little over a dollar in Canada, so they could buy something. And to this day, they still talk about, you know, going out for a meal. Anything else on this list here? There we are, back to the house where we started from. Okay, if I could get the pictures, if you could get me those pictures of the next, there's a picture set right underneath this. I want to just talk a little bit about some fruit we had. You would think that a missionary of 30 years should at least see some fruit. Well, I have. I've seen fruit in my ministry, and I know that people sometimes said, after having been there 30 years, like, are you finished doing what you want to do? And I thought, yes, I'm almost finished. Yes, the next, I think it says Jenna's letter over there. Jenna's news, there's news, N-E-W-S. Click on that folder and you'll get it. I just want to show you this girl, Jenna, who got married. This is actually also her on the right side there. She was a really good student. She was my working student for 10 years. And in those 10 years, she really got to know me. and I got to know her. And this is it. Here's a letter that she wrote to me when I was already home in Canada. And I don't know if we can read all of it, but I'll just say there on the top two pictures, she has a note about her brother, Novi. Novi is the nurse, and that's the guy who is doing the sweeping in my yard. Now, Jenna is a graduate. She graduated with a business administrative, degree. And her husband is a teacher. And both of these are professionals, and we put them through school. It was a long journey. Actually, her husband had to retake his a board exam to get a license to teach in the Philippines. And once you have that, you can get a salary from the government. But if you don't have it, even if you would teach, you wouldn't get any salary. So both Jenna and her husband do well. And this is what we would do when we first were missionaries. We had to send reports. And here's Jenna. Maybe her English isn't always correct, but she has written this. Let's see what she writes. My brother, Novi, a newly graduated nurse, he lived with us while he is searching a job. He was nursing board passer. We are so thankful for all the medicines donated from Craig, somebody who came to visit them in their tribal area, Gladys, Melanie, and Todd. All the medicines are useful. He's doing his ministry by helping all the wounded patients come to our house to seek help, accident cases. Thank God for his life. He was under OMF scholarship until he graduated from his degree. He is able to help the Sasang team, too, while he is waiting. Now, the Sasang team has nothing to do with OMF, really, but there was a fellow that Jenna and Eddie met during their Israel trip who liked to make instruments. And he really went into this tribal area, and they would carve instruments like, well, they made drums and they made flutes. And he's actually got a website, and I looked up the flutes the other day, and they're beautiful. And he sells them. So they make them there, and then they transfer them. He's from the States to the States, and he sells them. So if you think you would just have to do what, I mean, if you have gifts and abilities, you can always use them. And even if you can just do it for some time, it really helps us, because sometimes you can do something that we can't do. I've been there a long time. I know the culture. I could tell you that I could go with you and I could tell you whatever the guys are saying, but I couldn't do the rest, and you could do the rest. So if you would ever think that you would like to do a short-term thing, lots of opportunities. Eddie is a teacher, and that's Jenna's husband, and evangelist. Eddie shared the gospel to our visitors. They are some newly surrendered NPA, New People's Army. Eddie explained the love of God to them. Now, the New People's Army, that's communists. And there are a lot of communist people living in that area. And I went to stay with Jenna one time for about 10 days, or was seven to 10 days. And I said, oh, this is rather a dangerous place to live, isn't it? And she said, no. She said, you know, to tell the truth, half of these guys, they are relatives of my husband's. And I said, oh, very interesting, you know. So I'm not sure how they live. But she said, you're safe here. You're okay. If you're not safe, you will know it. And so I lived there in the tribes with them. We have three students live with us now. We are helping them for their studies because their parents can't afford to send them to school. We also help them to know more about Jesus. And they have a lot of opportunities now to think that this is what missionaries used to do, and now we have the nationals doing it there in their own tribal area. She has actually moved right into the tribal area where Eddie comes from, next door to the parents' house. And lots of stories I could tell you about them moving there and what they do and how they live. Very simple lives. And they tried to make a nice toilet for me when I came, because they do it different than we do. And they know, they've seen life in the city, but they're able much easier for them to live in a tribal area. And actually, part of our scholarship program with our students is that every summer, when summer comes around, we don't let them just go back to the hills and do whatever they like. We ask them to teach DVBS in the hills. So they go out to different areas, and then we give them an allowance to do it, because you can imagine how would you feel if you serve all summer and you don't get nothing for it. So we give them allowance, but we also expect them to teach DVBS. There are just some pictures of Eddie teaches his pupils using their mother tongue, and he is also heading up some kind of a mother tongue language thing right now. So we really thank God for fruit in these different areas. And Jenna just recently wrote and said, please pray for me, not for me, for us. She said, we want to go from our tribal area to where my parents live, and her parents are animistic. And we have shared the gospel with them before, but we're not quite sure of what they really think in their own hearts. And so Jenna and Eddie have decided that they would like to rent a jeepney, if you know what, it's a big vehicle, which can take a lot of people. They want to take instruments and also video, media, ministry, network, videos that they can show in the tribal areas. Now, if you think that's impossible because there's no electricity, they have generators. And so they would show videos. But these videos aren't the same kind as we have here. These are videos that they have made in the tribal areas with Bible stories. And this is another type of ministry we have, video ministry, where we shoot movies. And we actually have people, they dress the Manobo people up, but they have to go according to their dress, and they will act out the Bible stories, like the prodigal son was one of the very first ones we had. And then they will show it in a tribal area. It's a very easy way to get people together in the evening. They have a screen up. They have a generator. And they run this story in their language. And then they look, and then one of the guys said, oh, that's just like my life. So very effective. And then after the video is finished, then they have an evangelist also with their own people. So you can see how God has been working in different ways in the tribal areas in the Philippines. And we don't only work in the tribal areas. In fact, I've lived in the city all these years. I had a lot to do with tribal people in my house, as was said in the beginning, some with medical and then later on now with young people. But I'm getting a little bit old. What do you think, young people? A little bit old for you guys. So come on, you guys, get ready and come help us. Okay? So anybody have any questions? We have a few minutes yet. You can also browse on the table in the back or come up here and ask me questions later on. Any question you would like, anything that something is not clear or you want to know about, you can look up. There's a little card back there. There's a website for OMF. You can find all this kind of information on the internet. It's nice and easy to do these days. Okay, there's a question. No. When we say indigenous, it really means tribal. And sometimes we call them tribal. Later on, we call them indigenous because we don't only work with tribal. We also work with Muslim groups. And so to make it more inclusive. But I'm not sure what the indigenous population is of the Philippines. And more of them are in the southern part of the Philippines than up north. Although there's tribal people in all parts of the Philippines, and if you have anybody from SAL, they could tell you where they all are and the languages they speak. And even in amongst our tribal areas, there's a lot of at least four or five language groups that we dealt with. So whenever we had missionaries going to different areas, they had to learn that particular dialect, plus the one that we do use in the city. So, so the Philippines, they must, 186 million. I'm not sure how many now, but over that number. That was last count, I know. Not sure. Does that answer your question?
Is that Chinese more, or is
it Filipinos? No, Filipinos. Yes. We do have a lot of Chinese in the Philippines. And part of that comes because of when the revolution took place in China and they had to get out, they fled to the Philippines. And they will live in pockets in the Philippines. But we don't have enough, and there's a big evangelical Chinese church right in Davao City, and they really can handle their own people. But we find that in the tribal areas, people don't tend, sometimes people from Manila would say, oh, you're going to Mindanao, that's dangerous, you know. That's like, that's where the rebel groups live. And when there was a kidnapping one time, Palawan Island, which isn't even that close to where we are, but, you know, it's in the south, so people say, oh, it's dangerous, but it can be dangerous anywhere. You're the most safe if you're in the place where God wants you. So, okay, I'm going to give it back to the speaker and then, or to the leader here, and then you can come later. Thanks.